Good morning. Happy Tuesday, everyone. Today is Human Rights Day. So sometime during the day, think of all the human rights that we are blessed with in the United States. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for December 10th, 2019. We are reading to you from our studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Judy and my partner at the microphone is Joan. We're glad to have you listening. We will start with a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. And there are three stories on the front page. One says, Welcome Santa. Families brave the cold for holiday on Central. The second story, upgrades to continue at municipal building. And our last story, from $1.19 to $3 million. Carson King shares how a Twitter post changed his life. He speaks to Manson Northwest Webster students about the power of social media. Today's weather, it's going to be chilly with a high of 17 and a low of 8. Expect a northwest wind of 8 to 11 miles per hour and wind chills as low as a minus 5. And here's Joan to read about welcoming Santa.
Good morning. Welcome Santa. Families brave the cold for a holiday on Central. This article is by Brendan Hoffman. Actually, it's made up of all photos. So there are numerous photos here that I will describe to you. First one shows Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus arrive at the Fort Dodge Public Library to greet families during holiday on Central on Monday. And this shows Mr. and Mrs. Claus arm in arm, the fire trucks in the background, and there are children eagerly waiting for them to approach. Another photo shows Santa Claus greeting Lane Van Every, who is 4 years old, and other children at the Fort Dodge Public Library during holiday on Central on Monday in Fort Dodge. And lots of children bundled up there. They've got their hats, their mittens, because it was very cold last night. Another photo, Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus greet Kristen Johnson and her son Isaac, who is 18 months old, at the Fort Dodge Public Library during holiday on Central on Monday in Fort Dodge. And Mr. and Mrs. Claus are sitting in a big chair, and Isaac is sitting on his mother's lap. There's a beautiful decorated Christmas tree beside them, and Mrs. Claus has baskets full of goodies by her side to give to the children. Then we have another photo showing Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus greet families at the Fort Dodge Public Library. And again, the children now being inside, they can take those coats off and really enjoy seeing Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus. Another photo shows Meredith Smith Lane poses for a portrait dressed as a Christmas tree at the Fort Dodge Public Library. And she's all in green and the dress has different colored balls on it. Red and white and purple, and on her head is one of those little headbands with a little Christmas tree on top with a gold star on it. Another photo shows students from Fort Dodge Cheer help children write letters to Santa Claus at the library. And the cheerleaders are all in their outfits, and they've got their red bows in their hair. The children are sitting at tables, and they're helping them write the letters. Another photo shows Julian Blanco, age 8. He's writing his letter to Santa Claus. Then we move on to members of the Fort Dodge cheerleaders read stories to children. And the children are all they're lying on the floor there, and the cheerleaders are reading a book. And our final photo shows Lily Eastwood, who's 4 years old, and her sister Nora Eastwood, age three, make snowmen with their aunt Laura Crowley at the Fort Dodge Public Library. And they have all of the little fuzz balls and everything so that they can decorate their snowmen.
Upgrades to continue at municipal building. This article is written by Bill Shea. The Fort Dodge Municipal Building will be under construction again next year as the long process of upgrading it continues. Some extensive interior renovations and the installation of new windows will be completed as a result of contracts awarded Monday by the City Council. Allers Associates Architects of Fort Dodge did the architectural work for both projects. Rojohn Home Improvement Incorporated of Fort Dodge was awarded a $782,000 contract for the interior renovations. Much of that work will be done on the west end of the building's main floor, where the council's old meeting room was located. That end of the building will be reconfigured to create 5 offices, a meeting room, and an employee break room that will also be a small meeting space, according to Ryan Mayle, the Assistant Director of Recreation. He said on the second floor, the Human Resources office will be renovated. The meeting room on that floor will be converted into 2 offices. The offices of City Manager David Fierke and Jeff Niemers, the City Clerk and Finance Director, will be moved from the west end of the main floor to the east end this week to prepare for the renovations. Mail said the contractor can start January 27th and must be done by November of 2020. Sandy Construction Supply Company Incorporated of Humboldt was awarded $263,496 contract for replacing windows and installing new garage doors on the building's south side. Mayo said all but one window in the building would be replaced. The lone window that will not be replaced under this contract is on the second floor on the southwest side. The window is near where the old city jail was. There are still some jail cells there behind the offices of the Engineering, Business Affairs, and Community Growth Department. Mayo said the jail cells will be eventually removed, and the only way to get them out of the building is through that one window. Therefore, that window will not be replaced until after the jail cells are gone. The municipal building is at 819 First Avenue South and was built in 1915.
Now, our final story from the front page, from $1.19 to $3 million. Carson King shares how a Twitter post changed his life. Speaks to Manson Northwest Webster students about the power of social media. This article is by Deanna Meyer, and it also has a photo by Deanna Meyer showing Carson King of Altoona speaks about what he learned through his experience with social media to an audience of Manson Northwest Webster 5th through 12th grade students Monday morning at the high school in Manson. When Carson King was 16 years old and an active high school student at Prairie City Monroe, he thought it would be funny to share a TV comedian's quote with a friend on Twitter. 8 years later, that single post nearly derailed an innocent fundraising effort that went viral, threatened to ruin his reputation, and ultimately pushed him into the national spotlight. The 24-year-old shared the lessons he learned from his experience, including what he would tell his 16-year-old self with 5th through 12th grade Manson Northwest Webster students Monday morning. For King, it began simply enough. As an unabashed Iowa State fan, he thought it would be funny to make a sign asking for adult beverages during a September home game in Ames. His campaign went viral when he happened to find himself in view of ESPN's College Game Day show as the entire crew set up right in front of him. The sign requested money be sent to his personal Venmo account for his beer supply. Thinking he might make $20 from a sympathetic fan if he was lucky, King was surprised to find he'd made between $400 and $600 in the first half hour. At that point, he made a decision. "I decided I could do a little bit better than myself here," King said, "so I decided what I wanted to do was send it to charity." He chose the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital and began to share his idea with friends and family on social media. However, the campaign quickly grew to include local and national TV and radio stations, even one in Australia. Money began pouring in. Next, Busch Light and other businesses joined in with matching funds. "Pretty soon we had $1 million. It was insane," King continued. But things changed when a Des Moines Register reporter discovered racist quotes he had posted to a friend on Twitter while in high school. "In those days," King said, "Twitter was like you and like your friends in your class. That's all it was," he said. "It was just a giant group chat. That's all we used it for. I had 25 followers. 8 years later, they were able to find the joke I made quoting a TV show. But because of it, Bush contacted him and said they would continue to match donations to the hospital for a month, but added, 'We don't want you to tag us anymore. We don't want to talk to you anymore. We're done.' All from a joke I thought was funny when I was 16, King said. He had reached another defining moment. I decided this was a chance to own up, said the Altoona resident, because everyone makes mistakes when they're younger. Everyone. You learn, you grow, you become a better person. No one's perfect. He told students that's the best thing to do when you make a mistake. You say, yep, I was a dumb kid. Move forward. Taking initiative, King chose to admit his mistake and discuss his teenage actions via a news conference on television. That's when his image changed for the better, as people learned who King was and got behind his campaign. People saw that and realized, wow, this kid is just a normal kid. He's not trying to be president. This is crazy, he said. So people really got behind me. They realized I make mistakes, and I grew, and I learned, and I became a responsible, mature adult. Well, as mature as you can be at 24. Within a day, the campaign reached over $2 million. As the money grew, King set a goal to reach $3 million. When the campaign was completed, he was able to donate $3,005,000 to help sick kids. To go with that $1.19 poster board I bought at Walmart to $3 million, I never thought it was possible, he said. From his experience, King shared three main lessons. First, he said, no act of kindness is too small, and that act can come from anyone. And that doesn't have to be raising money, King said. If someone's having a bad day, just cheer them up, talk to them, include people in things, especially in school. School's hard enough. Secondly, social media is a powerful tool that can be viewed by millions of people quickly. It can do a lot of good, King said, but it also makes your life very public. He cautioned students to think before they post. I always like to think, what would my mom or grandma think if I posted something on social media? He warned students that things they post now can affect their future, whether in high school, college, or beyond. Something you think is a little funny or a little mean can get you fired from a job. Finally, he said, you're never too small to make a difference with anything you do. If you live your life doing good things for other people, good things will come to you eventually. Today, King, who is a security supervisor at Prairie Meadows Casino, is working to set up his own foundation to reach as many people as possible. The money raised for the Iowa City Hospital is used for a wide array of needs, from continuing education to heart monitors for the neonatal intensive care unit, to cancer treatment, and even a child life specialist who does activities with a sick child so the parents can have a break and sense of normalcy. On his days off, King has been sought out to speak at schools and can be contacted at carsonkingspeaks@gmail.com. A lot of the kids realize I'm just a regular guy, he said. It sparked a lot of fundraising. After the assembly, Manson Northwest Senior A.J. Cardenas said, it really opened my eyes that when I grow up, everything I do now will affect me in the future. Freshman Abby Shannon echoed that comment, saying she learned, you really have to watch what you do on the Internet. And this is accompanied by another photo by Deanna Meyer showing Carson King posing with a group of sixth graders after an assembly Monday morning at Manson Northwest Webster High School in Manson. King fielded questions, signed autographs, and took pictures with Manson Northwest Webster students after speaking with them about the power of social media.
Road, sewer, and water budgets introduced. Fort Dodge will continue equipment purchases, and this article is written by Bill Shea. Stable budgets for road maintenance and the water and sewer systems will enable Fort Dodge to continue replacing heavy machinery, city council members learned Monday. The council began its work on the proposed 2020-2021 spending plan Monday by reviewing proposed budgets for key infrastructure. Although the next fiscal year doesn't begin until January 1st, 2020, state law requires cities to have their budgets approved by mid-March. That's why the council started crunching the budget numbers this month. The proposed road use tax budget was the first one on Monday's agenda. The road use tax is the city's share of gasoline taxes and vehicle registration fees. The proposed road use tax budget is $3,293,585. The biggest single portion of that budget is $910,840 for roadway maintenance. Another big component of the proposal is $449,760 for snow and ice removal. Jeff Nemers, the city clerk and finance director, said the proposal is a balanced budget in which the proposed expenditures will equal the anticipated revenue. He added that it will enable the city to continue its commitment to upgrading the equipment fleet. Planned equipment purchases include a new lift truck for the city electrician, a loader, a dump truck, and a street sweeper. The cost of some of these machines will be split between different city budget categories. It's healthy, Nemer said of the proposal. I'm pleased with this budget. The current road use tax budget is $3,357,534. Operating the city's sanitary sewer system will cost $11,498,815, according to the proposed budget. That's up from the current $11,222,715 budget. The biggest single piece of the proposed sewer budget is $4,078,406 for operating the wastewater treatment plant on Avenue B. Nemer said the proposed sewer budget is in a very strong position. The proposed budget for the water system is $10,197,252. That's up from the present $9,440,053. The proposed budget includes an additional $300,000 to pay for operating a new reverse osmosis system at the John W. Prey Water Facility. That system will reduce the hardness of the city's water, but it will not produce true soft water.
Council moves to take back damaged house. Officials say buyer didn't meet deadline for repairs, and this article is by Bill Shea. The Fort Dodge City Council on Monday moved to again take possession of a fire-damaged house and adjacent garage after its current owner failed to meet a deadline for bringing it into full compliance with building codes. After being served with formal notice of the council's action, Rod Mullins of Fort Dodge will have 30 days to bring the property at 801 South 15th Street into code compliance. If he doesn't, the city will assume ownership of the property. Mullins bought the property from the city in November 2017 for $30,001. The terms of the deal required him to have it in compliance with all codes within 18 months. That deadline passed on May 30th, and he asked the council for an extension until December 2021. During the council meeting, Mullins acknowledged that he did not meet the deadline. I have been operating in good faith, he said. He said he has done much of the work himself and has spent $15,000 on it. In a letter to city officials, he wrote that he is converting the three-car garage into a three-bedroom house. He wrote that he has the framing and plumbing for that job mostly done. He also wrote that he has removed most of the debris from the main house. We've got to get these projects done, Councilman Dave Flattery said. He added that the proposed extension was too much for me. Councilman Dean Hill asked Mullins if he knew what he was getting into when he made his offer for the property. Mullins replied that he did. He said his request for an extension was a reasonable approach. The majority of the council was unmoved by his argument. The council voted 5-1, with one member abstaining, to begin the process of taking property back. Council members Nevin Conrad, Terry Menke, Lydia Schnur, Flattery, and Hill voted yes. Councilman Jeff Halter voted no. Councilman Kim Allstop abstained, saying Mullins is one of his friends. The house was damaged by fire in the fall of 2015. The entire property was declared unfit for human habitation in May 2016 after city inspectors learned that the residents of the house had moved into the garage, which had no running water.
Now from our files, December 2004. It has a picture of Cindy Wallstrom, who was then 14, as she works on her fruitcake person, shaped in the form of a cheerleader during her art studio class. The students created art from fruitcakes, which might arguably be a much better use for them than eating them. And it just shows her kind of gluing pieces of her fruitcake cheerleader together. This date in history, today is Tuesday, December 10th, the 344th day of 2019. There are 21 days left in the year. Today's highlight, on December 10th, 1994, Yasser Arafat, Shimon Peres, and Yitzhak Rabin received the Nobel Peace Prize, pledging to pursue their mission of healing the anguished Middle East. On this date in 1817, Mississippi was admitted as the 20th state of the Union. In 1869, women were granted the right to vote in the Wyoming Territory. In 1905, the O. Henry short story, The Gift of the Magi, was published in the New York Sunday World magazine under the title Gifts of the Magi. In 1964, Martin Luther King received his Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, saying he accepted it with an abiding faith in America and an audacious faith in the future of mankind. In 1995, the first group of U.S. Marines arrived in the Bosnian capital of Sarajevo to join NATO soldiers to enforce peace in former Yugoslavia. In 1996, South African President Nelson Mandela signed the country's new constitution into law during a ceremony in Sharpeville. In 2007, suspended NFL star Michael Vick was sentenced by a federal judge in Richmond, Virginia, to 23 months in prison for bankrolling a dogfighting operation and killing dogs that underperformed. Vic served 19 months at Leavenworth. In 2013, South Africa held a memorial service for Nelson Mandela, during which U.S. President Barack Obama energized tens of thousands of spectators and nearly 100 visiting heads of state with a plea for the world to emulate, quote, the last great liberator of the 20th century, unquote. The ceremony was marred by the presence of a sign language interpreter who deaf advocates said was an imposter waving his arms around meaninglessly. General Motors named product chief Mary Barra its new CEO, making her the first woman to run a U.S. car company. 10 years ago, James Cameron's 3D film epic Avatar had its world premiere in London. 5 years ago, current and former CIA officials pushed back against the Senate Intelligence Committee's report released the day before, which concluded that the United States had brutalized scores of terror suspects during interrogations, calling the report a political stunt by Senate Democrats, which tarnished a program that saved American lives. 1 year ago, facing almost certain defeat, British Prime Minister Theresa May postponed a vote in Parliament on her Brexit deal, saying she would go back to the EU leaders to seek changes to the divorce agreement. Thought for today, you can give without loving, but you cannot love without giving. This quote is from Amy Carmichael, who was an American missionary who lived from 1867 to 1951.
Now we'll take a look at the community calendar to see what's going on in Fort Dodge and around the surrounding area. Daybreak Rotary Club, they were gathering at 6:45 this morning at the Iowa Central Community College in the cafeteria, which is room 101. Railroad retirees, they started gathering at 8 a.m. at Brownie's Cafe, located at 1712 Central Avenue. Fort Dodge Community Food Services retirees, 9 a.m. at Hy-Vee. Senior Coffee, 9 a.m., Emerald Oaks Dining Hall in Emmitsburg. Kossuth County Historical Museum, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Kossuth County Historical Museum is located in Algona. Blandon Memorial Art Museum, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. They are located at 920 3rd Avenue South, and admission is free. Fort Dodge Senior High Class of 1948 will meet at 11:30 at the Village Inn. There will be adult coloring from 11:30 to 1 p.m. and then again at 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Fort Dodge Public Library at 424 Central Avenue. Webster County Genealogical Society, noon to 3 p.m., Fort Dodge Public Library, 424 Central Avenue, and they will meet in room 134. Noon Kiwanis, noon at the Pizza Ranch. AA Alano Club, noon and 7 p.m., Serenity Group, 12 North 7th Street. Humboldt Rotary Club, noon at Miller's Landing, which is located on Highway 169 South in Humboldt. Al-Anon, 530, 600 North Ridgely Street in Algona. Life Without Ed, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church. They will meet in room 108. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge Club, 6 p.m. instructional session and play of hands at Citizens Central. Sac City Lions, 6:30 p.m. at Hutch's Cafe, located at 612 East Main in Sac City. PEO Chapter NJ, 7 p.m. at Friendship Haven. Fort Dodge Area Quilters, 7 p.m. Webster County Extension Office at the Crossroads Mall. Webster County Republicans will meet at 7 p.m. at 900 Central Avenue. Bets Off / GA, 8 to 9 p.m. Community and Family Resources at 726 South 17th Street. Phone number 576-7261. Ah Masters Toastmasters Club, 6:30 p.m. East Campus of the Iowa Central Community College, 2031 Quail Avenue. Enter the front door. Interested persons welcome. For information, call 570-7660. Harmony Brigade Barbershop Chorus, 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church Music Room, 1111 5th Avenue North, open to all men who love to sing. N.A. Candlelight Stick Meeting, 7 to 8 p.m. at the Shalom Center at 501 North 12th Street. And for a couple of announcements, come join us for lunch at Zakir's, located at 425 2nd Avenue South in Fort Dodge. Today, they're having lasagna. Wednesday, hamburger steak with mushroom gravy. Thursday, chicken a la king. And Friday, fried cod. And then a sip and shop at the Community Pizza at 2026 5th Avenue South, Thursday, December the 12th, 6 p.m., 5 vendors with free hors d'oeuvres.
And now for today's editorial, A Time for Angels Helps Those Who Mourn. Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services teams with clergy for event. The death of a loved one is the emotional equivalent of getting hit by a train. There's almost nothing that can create the bewildering range of emotions that the death of a loved one can generate. The range of emotions can include anger, fear, sadness, loneliness, and other feelings that defy ordinary description. And those emotions can hit hardest during the holiday season. The staff of Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services is well aware of that. So for 21 years, they have organized an event called A Time for Angels to help soothe the pain of people who have experienced a recent loss. A Time for Angels is traditionally held at St. Olaf Lutheran Church, but it is a non-denominational event in which the Gunderson funeral directors team up with the local clergy to provide comfort. This year's event was held Sunday with Monsignor Kevin McCoy of Holy Trinity Parish and the Reverend Dan Call of Grace Lutheran Church, offering messages of faith, hope, and love in the face of grief. Simply defined, angels are messengers and guardians of God's presence, said Phil Gunderson, owner of the funeral home. Angels are messengers of comfort, of joy, of courage, and hope. Those who attend the service receive an angel ornament. Hundreds of people have attended the event and benefited from it over the past 21 years. We thank Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services for going above and beyond what a funeral home would generally be expected to do to serve those who mourn. Credit is also due to St. Olaf Lutheran Church and the clergy members who make this event possible. And today's editorial cartoon, it has a picture of a truck, and on the back of the truck it says Trump 2020. And hanging on to the bumper is a donkey hanging on by its teeth, and he's carrying a suitcase which says articles of impeachment. And the donkey is thinking to himself, we got him. And now here's Joan to read the obituaries.
You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. Now we turn to today's obituaries. Dorothy Alexis Fryer, Norfolk, Nebraska. Services for Dorothy Alexis Fryer, age 96, of Norfolk, Nebraska, formerly of Fort Dodge and Davenport, will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday at First Congregational United Church of Christ in Norfolk. The Reverend Jackie Perry will officiate. Burial will be in the Prospect Hill Cemetery in Norfolk. The home for funerals in Norfolk is handling the arrangements. She died Saturday, December the 7th, 2019, at Faith Regional Health Services in Norfolk. The daughter of Roy and Helen Bradley Fryer was born on October the 3rd, 1923, in Norfolk. Following her graduation from Grinnell College in 1946, she was employed by the Fort Dodge Messenger for nearly 20 years, primarily as its regional editor. In 1966, Dorothy accepted the city editor position at the Norfolk Daily News. Following her 58-year newspaper career, Dorothy relocated to Davenport in 2004 to care for her cousin, the late Annis Maxwell. Dorothy remained in Davenport until moving to the Meadows in Norfolk in May of 2018 following a stroke. Survivors include two cherished cousins and many cherished friends. Condolences may be expressed to the family online at www.homeforfuneralsinc.com. Richard A. Dick Holst. Richard A. Dick Holst, 73, of Fort Dodge, died Sunday, December the 8th, 2019, at Unity Point Trinity Regional Medical Center. A service honoring Dick's life will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, December the 13th, at First Baptist Church. Interment will follow in North Lawn Cemetery with military gravesite honors presented by VFW Post Number 1856 and the Iowa Army National Guard. Visitation is 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Memorials may be directed to the discretion of the family. Richard is survived by his wife, Pat, his children, Brian, wife, Amanda Holst, and Melissa Holst, all of Fort Dodge, grandchildren, Colby Wilson and Tristan Holst, siblings, Mark, wife, Dixie Holst, of Lake City, Rosie, husband, Mark Licht, of Clare, Sandra Doty, Fort Dodge, Rhonda, husband Michael Fiorzo of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and many nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents and two brothers, David and Frederick Holst. Richard Allen Holst, the son of Martin and Bernice Dean Holst, was born April the 19th, 1946, in Fort Dodge. He attended school at Manson and was drafted into the U.S. Army, where he served as a gunner in the artillery during Vietnam. Following his discharge, he returned to Kinnearum. Richard did carpentry work, worked at a box factory, and Iowa beef processors. Richard was united in marriage to Patricia Toole on September the 24th, 1977, at First Baptist Church. He was a construction worker with Kalasha Construction and worked for Webster County Maintenance as a supervisor. He then went on to work at Beiser Lumber, from where he retired. Most recently, he worked at Fort Frenzy as their maintenance man. He was a man who took great pride in his meticulous work. Richard was a life member of the VFW Post Number 1856 and was a member of First Baptist Church. He loved to play golf, and cribbage was his favorite of many card games he enjoyed. He loved to play slow-pitch softball, watch races, and football, among other sports. He was an avid fan of the Kansas City Chiefs and Iowa Hawkeyes. Richard went on the honor flight for Vietnam veterans. He was a fun-loving, easygoing guy who loved to laugh and have a good time. He treasured spending time with his grandchildren and attending their many events. K. Charlotte Nurus Larson. K. Charlotte Nerhus Larson was called to be home with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on December 7, 2019, after a short illness. A service honoring Kay's life will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December the 11th, at Badger Lutheran Church, with the Reverend Scott Meyer officiating. Interment will be in Hovey Cemetery. Visitation is 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Badger Lutheran Church. Arrangements have been entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. She was preceded in death by her first husband, Velda Nerhus, her son Terrence Nerhus, her sisters Maxine and Leon, and brothers Kelsey, Wayne, and Eugene. She leaves a wonderful legacy. She is survived by her second husband, Brian D. Larson, her four children, Randall Nerhus of Des Moines, Timothy Karen Nerhus of Eagan, Minnesota, Scott, wife Paula Nerhus of Badger, Iowa, and Valerie K. Bross, husband Brad of West Des Moines, and her daughter-in-law Joyce, husband Terry Nerhus of Fort Dodge. Also cherishing her memory are her 14 beloved grandchildren, Melanie, husband David Bothney, Lucas, wife Raina Nerhus, Austin, wife Lindsay Nerhus, Lauren Nerhus, Spencer Nerhus, Preston Nerhus, Jacob, wife Kaylee Nerhus, Kay, wife Liz Nerhus, Logan Cassidy, Lacey Cassidy, Chase Cassidy, Grant Cassidy, Elena Bross, and Belden Bross. She was equally thankful and proud of her 8 great-grandchildren, Charles Bonke, Samuel Bonke, Greta Bonke, Graham Nerhus, Harrison Nerhus, Andrew Nerhus, Lily Nerhus, and Sylvia Cassidy. She is also survived by her sisters, Beverly, husband Dick Peterson, and Vivian Hansen, and many loving nieces and nephews. Kay's marriage to Brian added to her family Eric, Carl, Brent Larson, and their respective families. Kay Charlotte Lowry was born at Lutheran Hospital in Fort Dodge, Iowa, on April the 15th, 1938, the last of 8 children born to Kelly and Viola Lowry. She spent her childhood living in the town of Callander and loved every minute of it. She adored the social aspect of living in a small town and spending time with her many friends and relatives. She was so proud to grow up across the street from Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Callander, where she learned about Jesus and developed her strong Christian faith. She enjoyed telling stories of her youth and how fortunate she was to grow up in a loving family who always opened their door to others. She often spoke of her humble beginnings, but was so proud of her family. She was especially proud of her family members who served in the military, both past and present. She graduated from Callander High School in 1955 and attended 1 year at Fort Dodge Junior College. Kay and Belden were married on March the 2nd, 1957, at Badger Lutheran Church in Badger, Iowa. She quickly adapted from small-town girl to farmer's wife. She made delicious chocolate cake, large family meals, and hosted holiday gatherings. When it came to entertaining, Kay was extremely talented, down to every last detail. Her home was always decorated with care, her meals were amazing, and she always made every guest feel welcome. They started farming by Vincent, Iowa, and in 1972 moved to the family farm north of Badger. She kept busy doing farming tasks, cleaning chicken eggs, and herding pigs. She also drove the corn picker for a number of seasons until smashing the center snoot on a rock, after which she never ran the corn picker again. Her church, family, and community were her life. She served on the board, sang in the choir, participated, and led Bible studies. One of her favorite activities at Badger Lutheran was preparing and enjoying the annual Norwegian Supper. Music was her passion, expressed by playing piano, soloist, and being an active member in the church choir. Kay was also a soloist at many weddings. She will leave many great memories by all of the lives she touched. Kay's life was generously given in service to the Lord. Glenn Edwin Werglin. Glenn Edwin Werglin, age 97 of Humboldt, was called to be with our Lord on November the 26th, 2019 at his home. Glenn, the son of Lewis and Anna Werglin, was born May the 3rd, 1922 in Goldfield, Iowa. Funeral services will be held on Wednesday, December the 11th at 2 p.m. at Ulugsvang Lutheran Church in Thor. A visitation will be 1 hour prior to the start of the funeral service at the church. Burial will be held at East Ullingsvang Cemetery in Humboldt. The Mason Linhart Funeral and Cremation Service of Humboldt is assisting the family. Memorials in his name may be made to the church. Harold F. Huebner, Rockwell City. Harold F. Huebner, 95, passed away Sunday, December the 8th, 2019, at the Fort Dodge Nursing and Rehab, Fort Dodge, Iowa. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, December the 13th, at St. Francis Catholic Church in Rockwell City, with Father Lynn Brutch officiating. Burial will be at St. Francis Cemetery with military gravesides rites conducted by the Rockwell City Veteran Organization. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, December the 12th, at Palmer and Swank Funeral Home in Rockwell City, with a parish rosary at 4:30 p.m. and a vigil for the deceased at 6:30 p.m. Memorials may be made to the St. Jude Children's Hospital. Kristen E. Tell, Clive. Kristen E. Tell, 66 of Clive, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, December the 7th, 2019 at Unity Point Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines. Funeral services will be held 10:30 a.m. Friday, December the 13th, 2019 at the United Methodist Church in Dayton. Pastor K. Christie will officiate. Burial will be in the Dayton Cemetery. Visitation will be Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. at Carson Stapp Funeral Home in Dayton. For online obituaries and condolences, visit www.carsonstappfuneralhome.com. Ella Rossing, Livermore. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at St. Olaf Lutheran Church in Bode. Visitation will be 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday at the Lentz Funeral Home in Livermore. And the funeral home's website is www.lentzfuneralhome.com. Marlis Tukey. Funeral services will be held on Wednesday, December the 11th at 10:30 a.m. at Evangelical Lutheran Church in Eagle Grove. Visitation is from 9 a.m. until service time at the church. Website www.faustfh.com. And then from Loffesweiler and Seavers Funeral Home, located at 307 South 12th Street in Fort Dodge. Phone number 515-576-3156. Carlene Allard, 81, Graveside, 11 a.m. Saturday in Early at the Union Cemetery in Early, Iowa. And then Ruth Olmsted, age 70, services pending. From Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services at 1615 North 15th Street, phone 576-7128. Kay Nuras Larson, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at the Badger Lutheran Church. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Badger Lutheran Church. And then in service to Richard Dick Holst.
Now turning to sports. Breakout. Wise Camp scores 23 as Hawks roll Gophers. And this article has three pictures, but two of them are on this page. One shows Iowa's Joe Weiskamp as he celebrates after making a three-point basket against Minnesota Monday in Iowa City. And it has him running down the court holding up his hand, and it looks like an okay symbol, but I think it also signifies a three-pointer. And the other picture shows Iowa's Luca Garza as he shoots a three-point basket over Minnesota's Daniel Oturo Monday in Iowa City. The Hawkeyes won 72-52. This was the breakout game Iowa had been waiting all season for from sophomore Joe Weiskamp. Weiskamp scored his season-high 23 points to go with a strong defensive effort, and Iowa blew past Minnesota 72-52 on Monday night in its Big Ten home opener. Luca Garza had 21 points with 10 rebounds for the Hawkeyes, who are 7-3-1-1 in the Big Ten. who hit 8 of their first 16 threes and cruising to their second win in 3 tries. He was locked in, Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey said. The thing that was impressive about Joe to me was that he played that kind of great defense. Weiskamp opened the second half with a 3 to give Iowa its first double-digit lead at 40-29. And Weiskamp pushed it to a 49-34 on a layup. Garza followed with an inside bucket that made it a 17-point game and forced Minnesota coach Richard Pitino to call a timeout even though a media stoppage was imminent. Minnesota, who is 4-5 and 0-1 in the Big Ten, showed some life, though, as Daniel Oturo's 3 cut it to 55-45 with just over 10 minutes left. But Weiskamp dashed to the three-point line to block a Trey Williams jumper and took the loose ball down the floor for a dunk that stopped a 7-0 Gophers run. Garza followed with a jump hook and a 3, and the lead was back to 62-47. I thought Weiskamp's block and run out was huge, McCaffrey said. Weiskamp bounced back from a disappointing effort on Friday's 103-91 loss to Michigan by hitting 5 of his 7 threes, grabbing 6 rebounds, and not turning it over once. Not my best performance against Michigan. I watched a lot of tape on what I could improve on both offensively and defensively. I tried to come out and just be aggressive from the get-go, Weiskamp said. Oturu had 22 points and 12 rebounds for his 5th double-double of the season. But Oturu, who had 8 turnovers, many of them coming when he walked while attempting a post move. Minnesota shot just 6 of 25 on threes and committed 15 turnovers. The Gophers shot just 36.8% from the floor, and their 3 starting guards were a ghastly 3 of 29 shooting. We didn't hit a lot of shots, but we've got to do a better job of execution, Pitino said.
Motivated to succeed. Taylor strives in working hard to be the best on the mat. This article is by Chris Johnson. It's accompanied by 2 photos. The first one showing Carson Taylor with his arms reaching up. He's showing he just won one of his matches. And the other one showing him in position to take down his opponent on the mat. Some of the questions that were asked of Carson: favorite vacation destination? And it would be Yosemite, California. People I would like to have dinner with: Avery Thompson, Austin Lee, Brooks Cowell. It would surprise people that I play video games. My sports role model, John Cena. My everyday role model, my dad. I can't go a day without cereal, and his favorite cereals are Fruity Pebbles or Cap'n Crunch. Superstition: when I'm downstairs and go upstairs, I turn the lights out and run up fast because I think something is chasing me. My most heated rivalry, Southeast Polk. Favorite road trip, Fargo. What are you listening to right now? Eminem. Favorites, team, Iowa Hawkeyes. Favorite class is carpentry. Favorite movie, Sandlot. Favorite book, The Outsiders. And favorite photo app, YouTube. Every time the cards have been stacked against him, Fort Dodge senior Carson Taylor has used that as motivation to get to where he wanted to be. As a freshman, Taylor didn't make the varsity lineup, and that propelled him into a work ethic that eventually led him to the top of the state podium. Not being on varsity my freshman year and then making it my sophomore year made me work even harder, Taylor said. My work ethic got even higher after my sophomore year, and I just kept grinding. After a 5th-place finish at state as a sophomore, Taylor had a strong regular season run and entered the state tournament as the 5th seed. That was all Taylor needed to push even harder to earn state glory. Once inside Wells Fargo Arena, he moved through the 4th, 1st, and 3rd seeds to claim the 120-pound state championship. Going into the state tournament being the 5th seed was a big motivator, Taylor said. I knew I was better than that and knew it was going to be a dogfight, but I kept my mind right. At state, it's a lot more mental. You have to keep your composure and keep calm when you're down. You have to keep going and can't quit. After returning to Fort Dodge Senior High as a state champion, Taylor wasn't about to sit back, heading right to work, knowing what the feeling was like to have the championship medal placed around his neck. "It was pretty cool when people would congratulate me after winning the state title," Taylor said. "I want to do that again because that feeling was amazing. I've just been working hard and working out to keep pushing myself to get better and make a return to state." The currently second-ranked Class 3A 126-pounder has decided to continue to wrestle in college and will keep his education and wrestling career going at Grandview. The Vikings are tied with Adams State and Central State for the most national team titles, 8, in NAIA history. Grandview has won 8 straight, which is the second-largest consecutive championship streak for any wrestling program at any level. Iowa won 9 Division I crowns from 78 to 1986. "They," Grandview, "started talking to me early," Taylor said. "I went on my visit and liked the campus and the coaches. I met with a couple of wrestlers and liked the environment. That was another big thing for me. I was also looking at Buena Vista and possibly walking on at Iowa State, but decided Grandview was a good fit and pretty close to home." With his future decided, Taylor is still focused on his remaining season as a Dodger, with a tight-knit group that has built a special bond and is looking to bring home the school's 6th straight top 3 medal. "I love being a Dodger with all of the homegrown wrestlers that have been working hard together since we were young," Taylor said. "We are like brothers and are close together. Being a Dodger is being part of a family. I grew up with most of these guys, and we feel comfortable around each other. It just feels natural to be a part of the Dodger team." Taylor is off to another hot start, winning 6 straight matches, 5 by fall. This past weekend, he claimed the Independence 126-pound championship. Taylor is 88-15 in his career. The Dodger wrestling family isn't just in the wrestling room. It extends into the community and with younger wrestlers waiting for their turn to wear the red and black. Taylor's story is one to live by. "I would tell the younger wrestlers to just keep working at it and never quit," Taylor said. "You might not be the best right now, but you just have to keep working. You have to believe in yourself and put in a lot of work."
And now for the Hoop Scoops. Fort Dodge's first. The Tip Varsity Girls starts at 6:15 with the boys to follow inside the Dodger Gym. Girls' probable starters: Tori Bennett, a sophomore; Aaliyah Palmer, sophomore; Cheyenne Miller-Hamid, junior; Tristan Doster, junior; Haley Wills, sophomore. For Ames, you'll have Carolyn Waite, junior; Morgan Siebert, senior; Tegan Lipsy, senior; Madeline Timmermans, junior; and Ashley Imes, junior. The last meeting, Fort Dodge lost to Ames 78-31 last season. Jalen Adams led the Dodgers with 11 points. For Ames, Waite had 25 points, and Lipsy added 18. The Dodgers lost to Urbandale 64-7 the last time, their last game. Bennett, Adams, and Jabrana Clark led the way with 8 points each. Doster pulled down 12 rebounds. About Ames: Ames is coming off a 53-42 victory over Ottumwa. 3 players reached double figures, led by Imes at 19 points, Waite had 12, and Lipsy had a double-double with 15 rebounds and 10 points. Ames has also beaten Des Moines East while losing to Waukee and Mason City. For the boys, the probable starters for Fort Dodge will be Aisley Thorson, a senior; Tyson Kershaw, senior; Bryson Bell, senior; Darian Callahan, junior; Montarius Abrams Altman, sophomore. For Ames, there'll be Jay Rathke, a senior; senior Cooper Downs; junior Kayshawn Brooks; senior Jameson Delizzi; and sophomore Corey Phillips. At their last meeting, the Dodgers lost to Ames 55-31. The graduate Jordan Jackson led Fort Dodge with 14 points. For Ames, then senior Japana Kellogg had 18 points. Last time out, the Dodgers suffered a 66-44 loss at Urbandale. Ford Dodge is coming off a three-game road trip. About Ames, Ames is coming off a win against Ottumwa. In their first contest of the season, they lost to Mason City. DeLisi led the way with 16 points, while Brooks has 14 and Downs added 11. And now for St. Edmund Hoop Scoop. The tip, the varsity girls start at 6:15 p.m., with the boys to follow in the Gale Gym. The probable starters for St. Edmund's will be junior Avery Gallis, senior Cabri McBride, senior Emma Neverman, junior Leah Neverman, and Gracie Harvey, who is a sophomore. For Southeast Valley, you'll have junior Chloe Hicks, senior Janie Ferrari, senior Viatra Scott, junior Emily Jeske, and junior Emily Hempstead. At their last meeting, Southeast Valley beat the Gales 37-33 in Gowrie. Jeske led the Gales with 15 points, while her 2019 graduate sister Maddie, had 9. Josie Timmerman paced the Gales with 15 points, and graduate Erin Flattery had 12. Last time out, the Gales lost to Hampton Dumont Cal 61-25. McBride and Leah Neverman led the Gales with 8 points each. Neverman pulled down 10 rebounds.
Now we'll look at the weather. We'll do a recap of that and the forecast. Today it's going to be mostly sunny, high around 17, low around 8, with the wind being out of the northwest at 8 to 11. So not as strong as yesterday, but we're still going to have that northwest wind. Tomorrow mostly sunny, high around 19, low around 12. Thursday mostly cloudy, high around 35, low around 25. On Friday, mostly cloudy, high around 40, low around 24. So each day we're warming up a little bit if we can get through these next couple days. On Saturday, it's going to be mostly cloudy, high around 32 with a low around 16. Sunday, mostly cloudy, high around 26, low around 13. And Monday, partly sunny, high around 28, low around 15. So we're going to kind of be cold for a couple days, warm up a little bit, and then drop a little. Yesterday's high was 31. Yesterday's low, 15. A year ago, the high was 30 and the low was 16. Sunset today will be 4:43. Sunrise tomorrow, 7:36. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. We thank the folks at Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge for so many years. And we thank you for listening with Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Wishing you all a dream to bless and a star to guide.